Good morning. It is 9:41 a.m. on Monday, the 25th of February, 2019. It's a little chillier this morning than it was yesterday morning. Chris is also a little earlier, I think. Should be back by 10. A little after. Okay. So the last 23 hours. Last day, I have been working on getting my new newsletter put together. Somebody in a Facebook group suggested that since it's halfway through the month, I should call it the Monk Post, which I have to admit appeals to me on a certain level. If nothing else, it's an in-joke that we can all share. But, No, I think I'm going to go with course correction. We'll put it in the course correction. The mid-month course correction. So that way I'll have a blog post at the beginning of the month, a newsletter in the middle of the month, and this podcast over many of the days of the month. I can't even say most of the month anymore, because January and February have been, I've really been slacking. The other side of that is that I have to put on my be gentle with yourself hat and say, reframe it as I just have not been able. Because if I had been able, I would have done it. A lot of days it was just like, oh God, it's 1 o'clock. I've been sitting here since 6. What happened? Jesus. And God help you if you've tried to reach us on our landline lately, because that landline has been unplugged. For hours every day. Today, luckily, it was not unplugged because the doctor's office called to postpone my wife's appointment this morning, so they called before she got on the road and drove for an hour to get over there, which was good. Downside is that she spent yesterday getting stressed over it and didn't get much sleep last night because she was worried about driving over to Fort Collins. I've offered to drive her, but that's not going to work, so okay. Anyway, so it's been interesting going through the onboarding process. And for those who aren't familiar with that jargon term, the days when you clicked a link and said, yeah, sign me up, typed in your email address and sent it off into the ether net. Those aren't there anymore. That's no longer considered best practice. Apparently best practice is popping a form up in your face while you're trying to read an article on a blog you've never visited before. Yeah, I'm not going to get that good. That's not going to happen. I hate those forms. I shut them down and leave the site usually. But the clue by four that I got, you are not your audience. I have to keep remembering that one. You are not your audience. And there must be enough people who really like those, or who at least accept them, because it's just like everybody's doing it. Everybody but me. I'll just put a little form up in the corner. We'll call it good. But I have set up an automated process, which some will find tedious and abandon. I know I would, but I'm not my audience. You guys listen to me ramble on about nothing for days on end. So, okay, fine. People want to hear from me. Not everybody wants to hear me every day. Not everybody wants to hear me talk. Some people just want to know, where is the next book? What are you doing? Where are we? So the process is click the link, hit the form. You get a double opt-in, which means you have to confirm the form in an email. And I have not seen that confirmation form. I have to look for it. And then you get a welcome message. A little email that says, welcome. And a little bit about what's going to happen over the next few days. And then the next day, you got another little welcome message. And in this case, it's an introduction to why did I start writing space opera. It's just short. It's like 500 words. Actually, I think it's shorter. I think it's like 350 words. And then there's another day. Oh, and there's a little cookie at the end of that, which is a PDF of the Wingman story that any of you who are already on the Facebook group might have seen, that pig snow bunnies in hell story. And then the next day, you get another message talking about fantasy. Why did I write fantasy? How did Ravenwood come to be? The story of how I got snookered into writing Ravenwood and why I love it so much now. And then one last time, the next day, you'll get a letter from me, an email from me saying, okay, and this is how you can hear me. So I talk about the work that I've done in the past, that some is still available, but I can't distribute much of it, that my voice work is still out there on full cast audio work and on interviews. I've got some of those on a page that I link to. And that there's this morning podcast where I walk along and ramble while I ramble. And it was an interesting experience because it made me stop and think about all of the things that I do. So the science fiction, how did the science fiction come to be? Well, the fantasy, how did the fantasy come to be? Why do I do the fantasy? And what is a reader going to find interesting about the story about Merle Lafferty challenging me to do NaNoWriMo in half a month? And the truth is, I told that story to Bill Cruz Sr., Jr., well, the four people who are at the table with us at, with me, at Austin, at Smarter Artist. And I told them that story, and they were like, oh, wow, that is so cool. And I'm like, okay, well, it's just what happened. But these are people who are hardcore fans. They really like my work. They may be listening now. Hi, Bill. Hi, Tom. And yet they still thought it was cool. They thought it was a cool story. They thought it was, I can't imagine they hadn't heard it before, but apparently they hadn't. So it's a little Easter egg. It's a little look behind the curtain. It's a little, this is me out from behind the story. This is me sitting across the table from you, telling you a story about me, not about Ishmael, not about Tanit. And it made me reevaluate a lot of what I was doing. It made me sit down, stop and think and look and consider. So it's a very introspective time. I need to write to Tammy and tell her that. Because that was a completely unexpected insight. 1-800-TOILETS. United Site Services is a sign on pretty much, well, 8 or 10 of these chain link barriers that have been put up around this construction site. United Construction Services. United Site Services. 1-800-TOILETS. I'm 12, I can't help it, I don't care. So that was good, that was interesting. And then I got into it with some of the Dizzy Dragons from North Mountain Fiction Writers. And they were helping me tune up the product description for Ravenwood. Get ready, say it with me. Monk Post. And the first few passes that they brought back to me were like, that's not even, yeah, it's grabby, but it's the wrong book. You're not describing Ravenwood. So they sort of forced me into reevaluating it from their lens and saying, okay, well, if it's not this, then what is it? What does the book do? So if you go look at Ravenwood on Amazon now, you'll see the new product description. And the tagline, which used to be, you're never too old to make a bad decision, is now, she's a 54-year-old herbalist with a body count. She's an itinerant herbalist with a body count. So, and then there's a rather long description about how she comes to winter over after 20 years on the road, on her way to find Gertie Pinecrest, but she stops to help a village in need, and then highwaymen attack the village, and in helping to fight them back, she discovers these strange things that happen, where she hopes she doesn't go mad. So, it's much more, at least it doesn't start with inner world, which is what everybody else started with. It's like, no, we're not going to do inner world, where? In a world of magic and mystery. No, it's just a world. It's a world of regular people who discover that what they know isn't really what is real. And that's a theme that I explore through the whole book, through the whole series. So having that understanding that in the world of magic mystery, no, don't go there. This isn't an adventure yarn. And now they want me to put new covers on them. Now, Kip Ayers is still working. He's still doing covers, and he would be delighted to do them, to redo them. And his cover analysis, when I asked him for the first set, was spot on. It was beautiful. It was wonderful. You line my books up with Macmillan and Orbit and St. Martin's and all other fantasy titles, and they just, you couldn't tell. You couldn't tell. The artwork carries the tone of the story perfectly. The knotwork decoration on the front, the font, all of it matched exactly the tone of the story that I wanted. And the dragons are all people who've been doing it since, I think, the earliest one started in 2015. And at least a few of them are killing it. I know one of them is going to join Sifu here probably next month. So I'm looking forward to welcoming her. But they're very much into urban fantasy paranormal. And so their fantasy covers are very different. They're very much in the glowing, sparkly, woo-woo school of magic. And it's exactly right for their niche. It's exactly right for their niche. Well, I went and looked at Epic Fantasy on Amazon. I started looking at covers on Epic Fantasy. They're all it reminded me of going back and looking at all the space opera covers that were all warships being blown up around the Belt of Orion, or whatever the hell it is. And so it's like, that's not what my space opera's like. Rogues with daggers and knights with shields and glamorous witches with flowing gowns is not exactly described in the land of Corlay, of the world of Tanith Fearport. And so I'm left with, I don't know what the current cover vernacular is. So changing it, being able to suggest to somebody, okay, this is what I'd like to see for cover, changing it is going to be a problem, which is why paying somebody like Kip Ayers to do it would be great, because he's dialed that in. That's his strength. That's his forte. That's what he does. He knows the cover market. He knows what the current vernacular of the cover art is. I don't know if these geese are going to come close enough for you to hear them or not. There's like three or four skeins of geese that are trying to sort themselves out up here. And a car going by. So, in spite of the fact that the cost would be, well, his rates now have gone up, even for a three-pack. It's not a cost I can't afford. It's not like I have to choose between buying covers and buying food, paying rent or something. It's not like I couldn't afford them, but the question is, would they be worth it in the long run for backlist covers, for backlist on a book that's running in the 60,000s in terms of sales rank? It's selling, I think I mentioned the other day, each of the books of the series is selling a book a day, plus or minus. Some days it's two, some days it's one, some days it's none. Most days it's at least one. For every book in the series, I sell at least one every day. So I wind up with, across the three titles, I wind up with 90 to 100 sales every month. So, yeah, I mean, they're regular contributors. But at that sales rate, it would be 5 months. Yeah, it would be 5 months to break even on that cover investment, assuming that they stayed the same. Now, the rest of the story is, I've redone the blurb for the first book. People aren't going to read the second blurb as rigidly, as earnestly to find out what the book is about, because by the time they get done with Ravenwood, they're going to know what the second book is about. And they're not going to, you know, it's great. I wrote it. It's still Tanith. Have fun. I could put that blurb, it probably would sell just as well as the one I've got there now. But putting new covers on them, to freshen them up, to give them a new look, to give them a new outlook, would they... And I'm advertising them. So would the combination of advertising and fresh covers be synergistic? Would I get more from doing both than I would by doing either? And the answer is, I don't know. That's the problem. I don't know. So I'm going to run the ads for a while and see if the ads do anything. And when I get a feel for what the ads are doing, I'll make another determination. If I go from one book a day to two books a day, that cuts that break-even point from... from 5 months, maybe down to 2 months, or maybe down to 1 month. So now it's earning. Now I can leverage the expense of the advertising even more by refreshing the refreshing the ad to reflect a new cover. I'll see. I don't know. I don't know if this is the right way to do it, if I should change the covers first and bite the bullet, or... I don't know. We'll see. It'll be what it'll be. Well, I did go back and fix the ads. I was really concerned because I had made a mistake on the initial ads. I'd bid too much for them. And the ads have now been approved, so I'm able to go back in and lower the bid price. So now I'll get 1,000. I've got the bid price and the buy, so I'll get 1,000 clicks apiece. So I'll be able to get a measure for what the conversion rate is for these ads for these books at this time. So yeah, that's where we are. And I am at the back gate, the point where I say tomorrow's another day, and with any luck at all, I'll talk to you then.